This is chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, text number 4. A person is said to be elevated in yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. Purport by His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When a person is fully engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he is pleased in himself, and thus he is no longer engaged in sense gratification or in fruitive activities. Otherwise, one must be engaged in sense gratification, since one cannot live without engagement. Without Krishna consciousness, one must be always seeking self-centered or extended selfish activities. But a Krishna conscious person can do everything for the satisfaction of Krishna and thereby be perfectly detached from sense gratification. One who has no such realization must mechanically try to escape material desires before being elevated to the top rung of the yoga ladder. Mukham karoti vachalam pangam langayate girim tat kripata maham vande shri gurundi natarane nama om vishnu padaya krishna prishtaya bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Shunivadi Paschatave Satana. This idea about detachment and renunciation is one of the most misunderstood concepts, evidently. Even when Prabhupada was in India in the early time, he was talking to somebody, some Indian people. They were saying, well, you know, you can't be a Hare Krishna if you're married, right? Or, you know, you have to be a sannyasi. Of course, in the Shankaracharya line, they have to be sannyasis, right? In order to study. The Prabhupada said, you know, these devotees are practically, most of them there were householders. But detached, renounced means not attached to the results. Sometimes we think, well, you know, we say we shouldn't be attached to results, but then you say you should sell this many books, or you should get money, or you should do something, right? So that's the result, right? Isn't it? We want results, but you shouldn't be attached to the result. You shouldn't think this is mine. I did it, and it's mine now, and I can do whatever I want with it. That's what it's Krishna's. Krishna gave us the ability, he gave us whatever the result is, whether it's big or small or apparently success or failure. It's what Krishna gave us, and it doesn't belong to us, it belongs to Krishna. And people misunderstand that. Or you can see, like, sometimes we see a madman on the street, you know, doesn't have anything, sometimes even naked. So they seem to be really detached, but they're doing what they want to do. They're not under the guidance of Krishna, so they're actually acting for sense gratification. And they may be attached to whatever they have. Sometimes you see them with a big bag full of old papers, and they're attached. If you tried to steal it, they would kill you. And it's mine. I've collected this. But to understand, like Prabhupada, he did so much, you know, the results were huge. But he never thought, I'm doing this, or this is mine. Everything was Krishna's. And that's what it means. Sense gratification means this is what I want to do. Fruitive activities mean we're trying to get something for myself. I'm doing something to get something, some fruit. It's not such a common in English anymore to use that term, but we want, what do we get? The money, usually. So why do you want money? Because then you can get, nowadays, the propaganda is if you have money, then you can get anything. You don't need to worry about anything else. You can purchase good health. You can purchase, you know, luxury. You can purchase, you know, companionship, wife. You can get whatever you want as long as you have money. So they just push people, try to get money. Artha. Dharma, artha. If normally, religious activities are just to get artha, money. And if you, I don't know, listen, In China, every morning in the Buddhist temple, there'd be so many people chanting. The priests are leading and they're chanting long, 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 you know, things for half hour, 1 hour. I ask a devotee, what are they? He said, well, they're talking about, you know, material prosperity and gain. If you turn on in America, they have many, many Christian people talking all day, like 24 hours. So mostly that's what they're saying, you know, you can, God wants you to be happy. Happy means you have material opulence. And this is what it's all about. You practice your religion, this church, this pastor, this mantra, and you'll get money. They don't bother to promise all the things you can buy with money so much anymore. Just you get money. There's still some that promise, you know, miracle cure from sickness. But even that now, at least in Africa, they don't say that so much anymore. Just to get rich. Prosperity church. There's one in Japan. They're here right across from the Lumpini. So they have their mantra, and they'll say, if you chant this mantra, one guy I met once, I was just a new devotee distributing books, and he was telling me, you got to do this one. You got to chant this. And I said, why? He said, I did it. I got a new car. I got a new girlfriend. I got this. I got that. You got to do this. This is like the real thing. He said, I just gave up all that. I don't want it. You know, I'm trying to get something real, something substantial. So when someone is advanced in yoga, elevated, he's renounced material desires. But that doesn't mean material desires, they might come, but we don't, someone's an advanced yogi, doesn't pay any attention to it, he doesn't jump to think I immediately have to satisfy this desire like modern people are. What do they call it? Compulsive, what is it?
Disorder. Compulsive disorder.
Yeah, compulsive something. You know, they just see something, have to buy it immediately.
Compulsive buying.
Compulsive shopping, compulsive fighting, compulsive, you know, whatever it is. Sex. You know, they just see the girl and they immediately have to do something. They get some money, they have to go and buy something that costs twice as much as how much money they have. Right? They cannot stop. People are shocked sometimes when they see what they bought. Why did I buy this? Just because, you know, you're in the shop. Oh, come over here, we have a special on this today. Quick, get over here quick. We have 10 minutes, you can get it cheap, and then run over there and buy it. Because it's compulsive. It's a popular term now. We should be like that for Krishna, compulsive service. Devotees, that's, you know, how they are. When there's any opportunity to serve Krishna, they want to grab it. Any opportunity to hear about Krishna, any opportunity to chant the holy name, some kind of service, they want to do it. And they will do it. Nothing can stop them. But that's good. So when it's fully engaged in loving service, he's happy. He's satisfied in himself. He doesn't need, you know, all this sense gratification. Sense gratification means me, 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 me. And that's how the karma, or dharma, artha, you know, you do some religious activity to get economic development, and then when you get economic development, karma, lust and sense gratification, enjoyment in the material world. And unfortunately, now that's why the Bhagavatam, it's not a new thing, although it seems like now it's much more prominent than ever. But obviously it's not new, because the second verse of the Bhagavatam is Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Nirmatsarana. It kicks out materially motivated religion. It kicks out the Bhagavatam, just, you know, completely rejects it as insanity to practice religion to get the material gain. Right? Very strongly. There's examples of people who did it and how pathetic they are. That's what Narada was chastising Vyasa. You know, the Vedas tell you how to perform religious activities to enjoy the material world. He said, your people want to enjoy anyway, now you're misleading them. But, of course, that was Krishna's will, because Krishna provides for everybody what they want. So, you know, you can have a yajna to become very beautiful, or you have a yajna to get rich, or a yajna to have great children, and all these things. And then it's religious, it's not so sinful. It's better to do that than rob, steal, and kill, you know, to get what you want. But he said, you know, Vyasa was still not happy, even though he was the most austere person in history, the most productive and the most scholarly and all those things. And he had, you know, definitely stated in many places in the Veda that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and Bhakti is superior. But it's not prominent. It takes like someone like the Six Goswamis to find it, because there's so much other stuff there. I was reading Mahabharata and get really tired of it sometimes, just describing all these heavenly planets and, you know, beautiful bodies and people singing your glories and having a wonderful vehicle and, you know, as a result of all these yajnas. And then there's a, you know, like there's a section about the glories of Lord Shiva, and definitely when you're reading that, you'll think, well, Shiva is supreme. So some people, that's the only part they've ever seen. They've only seen somebody just shows them the Shiva Purana and says, this is all it, you know. Or some other Purana, demigods. So the Bhagavatam doesn't mislead people at all. There's no chance. There's no question. It's only about bhakti, and only about surrendering everything to Krishna. And the joys of doing that, and the examples of so many people having done that, and how the people that are against Krishna, you know, they don't make it. They may get, like, you know, Ravana, he did so much tapasya. So he was, you know, really, well, the richest, most powerful, everything. Every material opulence, he had more than anybody. Intelligence. He was even very good looking. He had so many beautiful wives. He had golden, not only just a, you know, gold leaf room or something, he had a golden house made out of gold. And not only him, but the city was made out of gold. So opulent. But he wasn't happy. He was still lusty. Lust could never be satisfied. So unfortunately, he wanted the goddess of fortune herself. And that's what most people want. They want the Lakshmi without Narayan. Many people worship, many Gujarati especially, they worship Lakshmi. In their shop they have Lakshmi, and every morning
Puja.
They want Lakshmi. But Lakshmi is the eternal companion of Krishna. So if we worship Krishna, we get Lakshmi. Radharani is the supreme Lakshmi, the original Lakshmi, just like Vishnu is the original and all the incarnations, you know, they're coming from him, and all the Lakshmis are coming, or Krishna's original, and all the Lakshmis come from another one. She's the supreme. But devotees aren't looking for that kind of opulence and that kind of wealth. The wealth of the Brahmin is tapasya, doing some austerity that must be there. And, you know, I've been mentioning many times, because it's quite mind-boggling when you go to Vrindavan now, and hundreds of signboards are advertising luxury. I mean, here it's bad enough, but here you feel like you need some luxury here, you know. You don't. But Vrindavan, you know, we thought you're supposed to go there for tapasya, for spiritual advancement. And I looked in the dictionary under the, you know, the definition of luxury. You know, it specifically just something that's unnecessary comforts or something. And just interesting, I'll just look it up here so you can. luxury. This is what they're, you know, promoting. A material object, service, etc., conducive to sumptuous living, usually a delicacy, elegance, or refinement of living rather than a necessity. Gold cufflinks were a free or habitual indulgence in enjoyment of comfort and pleasure in addition to those necessary for a reasonable standard of well-being. And a means of ministering to such indulgence or enjoyment. A pleasure out of the ordinary allowed to oneself. A foolish or worthless form of self-indulgence. So this is what, you know, Maya is advertising all over Vrindavan. You can't believe how many times we see luxury. Luxurious apartment. All. But, so I don't know how that's going to, when people get those apartments, if that will, you know, inspire them to chant more and, you know, and meanwhile, other devotees come and they're walking on barefoot all month and sleeping outside in the tent and taking baths and buckets and passing through in the field. And they probably get much more spiritual benefit. Of course, some people can have the luxury and not try to enjoy it. But this is what people want. So all over the world we see this. This is the key, the main word in all the advertising I see, at least in India, and here also for cars and beyond luxury. But for the Brahmana, his wealth is supposed to be tapasya. So Prabhupada said, you know, he wanted devotees to live comfortably, not have to struggle for existence, you know, but not luxuriously. They have ads for luxurious furniture and, you know, so many things. But this is what people are seeking. Kama artha, and then artha, and then kama, and then moksha. When they finally get frustrated with the sense gratification, which never satisfies them, then they might think, well, I want to get out of this. I want liberation. I don't want to exist anymore. I want to just get free from the body and all these things. And we should be tapasya doesn't mean you have to sleep on the street naked, and but it means discipline, chanting every day, reading the Bhagavatam regularly, discussing the Bhagavatam, and especially preaching. Prabhupada said in Kali Yuga that preaching in Kali Yuga is more tapasya than these guys standing up to their neck in ice water in the winter. But many devotees are doing that for book distribution. Not in the water, but in the 40 below air, or the super hot, you know, places, or, you know, crowded from crazy places. They're doing that kind of tapasya. And you see they become very, very blissful. We're going out, you know, in places that are not exactly pleasing to the senses of the devotee, the things that people are eating and selling, right? But we get purified by going in those places. Ordinary yoga would think, you know, you can't go, you can't see these people, you know, you can't see, everybody's just absorbed in sense gratification, talking about it and advertising it. But when a devotee goes out to spread the holy name or distribute books, he's getting purified by going to the most degraded places amongst the most, you know, degraded people, because it all depends on the mercy of the Lord, what we try to do. And that's how you judge. Sometimes devotees ask, well, how do I know, you know, if I'm making any advancement? So if we're giving up to some extent, you know, sense gratification, in which every devotee is doing, just like we heard. Even just, we don't want to promote vegetarian separately from Krishna consciousness so much, but Bhishma Dev says in Mahabharata, even if someone just gives up eating meat, that's tapasya enough that they can be elevated to heavenly planet. Especially beef. Beef is so tasty and it gives so much strength. It's the most nice meat, you know. So if someone simply is a vegetarian, then at least that's not necessarily spiritual. They're not going to go to the Loka Vrindavan, but they can go to heavenly planets and get some higher pleasure. But still it's sinful. And so Krishna says you have to offer everything to Krishna. It's hard for some people to understand that if they don't believe in Krishna. So we heard that question. I don't know if he really meant it or he's just asking it because he gets asked that question so much. Right? Well, you're killing the carrot anyway, so what's the difference? Kill the cow, kill the carrot. No difference. Huh? If you're a really advanced Buddhist, you can see there's no difference between a cow and a carrot. It's much easier to kill the carrot. But those things are, you know, set aside as our quota. So the Isha Upanishad, Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam, Yat Kincha Jagacham Jagat, Tena Tatena Bundita, Magvidaha Kasasaranam. Everything belongs to the Lord, and we should take what's our quota. So for human beings, the fruits and vegetables and grains and milk, that's our quota. And we shouldn't take too much either, but the flesh of animals is not our quota. Somebody was saying how the Bible was adjusted. And see, when the Bible was first translated in English, the word meat was a general term for food, not for the flesh of animals. Like here, I don't know if it's rice, but in Japan, if you say gohan means rice. But for breakfast they say asa gohan, and for dinner they say yoru gohan. You know, morning rice, evening rice, lunch rice. But, and then people know that the morning rice has certain things with it, and the evening rice has different things with it. Same in Bengal and Orissa, you know. And we have rice. Rice means a feast. When you have rice, then you have all the 10 subjects around and so many things. So, that's what meat, like. Yeah.
And they say, that's like a lunch
or
dinner
or
meal.
Yeah, it's a meal. So that's what meat meant. Like we say sweet meat. Sometimes we say the meat of the fruit or something. The meat of the matter. But gradually now the word meat in English has come to mean flesh of animals. But I saw one Bible.
I was always wondering why Prabhupada, you know, was translating like the sweet thing is the sweet meat.
That's what they're called in, you know, his time in India. Sweet food. So, like one time I got some yogurt drink in Japan. And it was strawberry flavored. So I was looking at the label and it had the meat, you know, the meat kanji. But then I looked and, you know, it was the strawberry meat. Yeah, it wasn't flesh of animals. But I saw one Bible, and, you know, it said meat so many times because the Bible is a social commentary, so there's always social activities going on. And they put the meat every time in bold print, not only just the word, but in bold print. So when I was in Israel, I had it on the computer, I had the Bible, and I clicked meat, and then they said, okay, check this verse. And they checked the Hebrew version. I think we checked like 25 verses. And none of them said flesh of animal. It said, in the English it said they went and had meat. But in the Hebrew it said they had breakfast, or they had bread, or they had this. Never said they had the animal flesh. But that's how things, you know, get perverted. The Christians, you know, the Bible says you have to eat meat, you know. It says thou shalt not kill also. So they're very being misled. There's in the Hebrew, there's like 25 different words for eating, but every one of them is translated meat. So it's a problem. But, so we see devotees becoming advanced. They only want to eat prasadam. You know, they people offer other things they don't want. And that's a sign of advancement. You know, they gradually don't care to read the newspaper as much or this and that. And we don't like to associate intimately with non-devotees. These are all signs of advancement. We're all advancing day by day. And the more we hear Bhagavad Gita, so he's renounced all material and doesn't act for sense gratification and doesn't engage in fruitive activities. We engage in activities. And people misunderstand, like, what's that verse, the Indians? Karmana, karmana. The Hindus always say, you're entitled to your work, but not to the fruits or something. And they only use half the verse. And Prabhupada said, why don't you read the whole book? You know, same thing with the Christians. You know, why don't you read the whole book? You know, you just have one verse, half a verse or something. So one guy told me once, he said, I completely follow Bhagavad Gita. I'm completely renounced. You know, I give everything to my wife and children. That's what's called extended sense gratification. But what do you get from the wife and children? You get all your sense gratification. That's why you give them all the money. Right? Then they keep the house and they call you daddy and they give you birthday presents. But I don't have to give to Krishna because I give them. This verse doesn't say to give it to Krishna. The previous five verses. That particular verse doesn't. So we need to read the whole book. And we need to learn it from parampara. And it comes down in specific succession. Of course, Prabhupada is revealing it to us, but he's revealing, you know, the teachings of the previous acharyas. So, you know, by initiation we get connected. And it goes all the way back to Krishna. Everything else originally comes from Krishna. But we can't just go directly to connect. We can serve Krishna, the deity, we can hear directly from Krishna, but only because we're connected, you know, we get permission. And Krishna will let us dress him or cook for him because of surrendering to the spiritual master. He surrendered to his spiritual master, his spiritual master, his spiritual master. And that way we can become submissive. And we can be more effective to bring more and more people to Krishna. I was just walking here on that Ram Kumbhang, you know. I remember we did Harinam there one time, and it wasn't a Saturday night. Even for one person to walk, it's really hard. You know, there's so many people. But you just think, like, how can we get to these people? I mean, we're just so small. But when we go out and chant, many, many people hear the holy name. They may repeat the holy name. They may, you know, they get a book from it. They give a donation. They're all making advances. We just have to keep hammering away, you know, little by little. We went to this amazing place in Pattaya. This is called the Sanctuary of Truth. And it's a huge building, goes up really, really high. And it's all, everywhere you look is wood carving. Demigods, demigods. A few Krishna's lions. But it was all done by, you know, little guys with little children. You know, it's not like Kardama Muni just, you know. I mean, it's something like that, but the original guy, he thought of it, and he must have had to get so many architects and designers, and then just these little guys are still going at it, you know. And there's like thousands of these huge, you know, Brahmas and Indras and elephants, and there's so many demigods and Buddhas, and they're just So I was thinking, you know, that we just keep tapping away, you know, by chanting holy name, giving people books, trying the best we can. Something happens, and eventually you get something. You can see some result. And that's just you're chopped up. And they have a shop where they're cutting wood, and then you can see some of it. You know, it's just cut. You know, and then there's some. They put some chalk marks, and it doesn't look like much. But then eventually you got all these beautiful things. So they like that. They said you go to these big old churches in India or in Europe, and you know you don't know how it got made exactly. But here they're still they're demonstrating how it's being done. They want people to see it. And the guy is, you know, he wants to promote the Hindu idea. You know, of course, mainly it's Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, but he's understanding the difference. But it's quite interesting. But how much can be done? Constantly tapping away, you know. And of course, they have a plan. So we keep, and the same thing, our iron heart or our mountain of lust in our heart, if we just keep hammering away with the Maha Mantra, it's chipping away at that mountain of lust, and eventually it will break it wide open like a thunderbolt. And we can actually see ourselves as we really are. You know, part and parcel of Krishna, an intimate servant of Krishna, not just some spark and associate of Krishna. Be right there. We get some ideas theoretically now, but we have to keep hammering away because that covering of lust, and we have to keep pouring in the nectar because the outside forces are constantly pouring in the food to our senses. All right? You follow anything? Yeah, it's okay. She knows already. Any questions? Huh?
Thank you for the chat.
Well, it looked like it was going to be like that this morning. They did come late. Pretty good crowd.
It's a good start.
I was actually talking to Ramana.
Who?
Ramana.
Yeah.
Probably in future we must have target specific groups like corporate and university and things. This time it was more for the general public. But you know, and we do it early so that we notify institutions. I mean,
well, if you go to one campus and you know,
make it like university, all university graduate level students or something like that.
Yeah, that's
and then have a particular theme more like stress management or that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's so many different. But I saw one of the somebody filled out and they said, you know, what theme would you like? And they said the same thing.
Yeah.
I only saw one, but some people.
Yeah, that's an interesting.
Telling
you
people
the same theme to a particular group.
Yeah, there's certain. Many people are concerned.
And especially in a place like Bangkok.
Yeah, one of the most polluted. Air pollution. Lung pollution. No, we were in Ram Lakshman's house previously, and there was a kwang right behind. When those boats went by, you know, it would not get knocked out, it would smell, so it would come up. And then it settles down again, you don't have another boat comes, and then boat.
Even out here, in the ground that we have, the fact that the house that I understand, you know, they normally just close the window and they put the aircon all the time.
Yeah, and they get used to it. The human body, according, I don't know, Agastya Muni, some rishi, he said it's good for tapasya because of its quality, that it just gets accustomed to any condition. you know. Just like the guy comes here with the garbage truck, you know, I don't know what the guy from what they're like. For them it's money, money, money. So they get you get used to it. If it's cold, if it's hot, you know, you just get used to it. So if they live next to like when they changed the airport, the people in Dong Wong were complaining that they couldn't sleep because it's too quiet.
Right. And
the people at the new airport were complaining they couldn't sleep because it's too noisy. You know, they were conditioned.
I remember I had an Iranian friend, and he was saying the electricity in Iran was too cheap, and then they used to put the aircon all the time. And he was saying, if I don't put the aircon, I can't go to sleep because it used to make a sound, like, you know, like the cooler sound. Or
yeah.
I think in India they have the fan. It makes a sound, he was saying. Until I had that sound, I couldn't go to sleep.
No, people get conditioned. So we get conditioned to the tapasya of being a devotee, getting up early, you know, just get used to it. So even if we don't feel like it, we do it anyway. You know, somehow they just do it. Like this morning, I was sure I couldn't do it, but I did. I didn't want to. And you just get conditioned. Good by practice. Probably our tapas is not so severe, you know, just chant 16 rounds, follow the regulations. But we shouldn't seek too much luxury because that makes us start to think the body's a source of pleasure. And some of these new luxury houses are spooky, you know. I went in one in Japan one morning, a rich guy, and you know I went in the bathroom. The light came on automatic. The toilet seat came up, you know. And then when you put your hands under the faucet, the light comes on, so you can see your, you know, shines down from the faucet. You know, all these things that all automatic. Like there's ghosts in them. And then they get used to that. And if they go where they don't have that, they can't function. Yeah, this place is not working right, you know. Yeah, and then they want more and more. They're always, something better is always coming. All right? Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, most important book.